Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. Welcome back to this week's episode of Evolving to Exceptional. I have another great guest here with us today, Meredith Osborne, who is the Senior Vice President and Director of HR at Parkside Financial Bank and Trust. She has some really exciting and interesting experiences and unique benefits that her organization offers that we're going to spend some time talking about today. But first, Meredith, I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself. Give us a little bit of your background and why it is that you do what you do, why it is that you're in the space that you're in.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, thanks for having me, Jessica, and excited to talk with you today and everyone. I started my HR career kind of uniquely, and I really started a background in psychology in college, in very much that like, oh, what can I do that will allow me to help people, which I feel like is very stereotypical, but that's exactly where a lot of us come from and where I was coming from. And so really post college graduation, started working in community mental health and doing a lot of grant work to support just different programs in the mental health sector, and decided to go back to school. Got my master's degree in human development counseling. And really, because of that, I pursued counseling as kind of my initial career path and became credentialed and licensed and went through that and started really more as a child and adolescent counselor and then working with families. I really started transitioning to more HR while I was working at a university. And there was some opportunity to onboard new employees and hire and build up the department that I was in. I really enjoyed that. And quite honestly, just in mental health was getting pretty burnt out. So that was really my marker of transitioning to what I thought would be just a good next step, which was human resources. Took a lot of industrial organizational psychology classes in my undergraduate degree and enjoyed them. So HR just seemed like a really natural fit. And I luckily found a place that gave me really my first HR position. It was a privately owned advertising firm in St. Louis. And that really was my start and never looked back. Continued to pursue an HR career path and have really, really enjoyed it.
How have you found have you found that your counseling background, that experience has translated or helped you in the HR space? Have you seen overlap and value in that background and bringing it to this kind of, parallel-ish type of function?
I have, definitely. I feel like when it comes to sitting down with an individual or group of individuals and trying to problem solve, find ways to better communicate. A lot of those, were things that I learned through just working with individuals in therapy. And so the skills that I learned by doing that have definitely helped me when it comes to just the workplace. And certainly now when we're seeing just a lot more mental health issues, and people, quite honestly, just more open to talking about depression, anxiety, eating disorders, substance abuse, those are coming up more regularly in the workplace. And people, whether it be family leave or time off that they need, hey, I think I need help. Where do I turn to? Where do I go? Honestly, I'm so glad I have that background, because being able to have tough conversations, to listen and have true empathy for people and then provide resources has been extremely helpful in making this transition to human resources.
I could imagine, you know, that that experience brings a level of confidence and an understanding in how to deal with those challenges, especially in an environment where, you know, most workplaces, I shouldn't say most, many maybe, workplaces have in the past maybe taken more of a that's not our problem type of approach, right, with respect to mental health and the challenges that, that people are experiencing in their personal lives from that perspective. How have you seen that, that shift happen, or what has that looked like in your own organization as you've encountered those issues, and have, has there been a willingness to, you know, take that into account and maybe shift practices or look at situations differently as a result of those challenges that you're seeing?
Yes, definitely. For me, just in the HRC, it's been making sure that we do have resources. You know, that's when people are coming and they're saying, hey, I would really like to get some help. It's not only making sure we have like an EAP, an employee assistance program, but that we also have outside resources, you know, maybe based on location where these employees, you know, live, based on whether they have insurance coverage through us or through a spouse or however they can get help. So I think having resources and making sure we have those to easily give that information is one thing. And I, other HR professionals that I'm connected to or friends with, you know, we share those resources with one another. I would say that's where my background has been super helpful, is just having a pretty nice list of resources to give to people. I think the other thing has been getting our managers and just leadership in general comfortable with talking about mental health. Aside from just seeing claims reports and how that may be tied to our benefits, you know, it's also just being comfortable with having the conversation that people are having a hard time. And certainly post pandemic, that was a big conversation when it, you know, was time to talk about returning to the workplace. And certainly the anxiety of, you know, working moms and dads who were sending their children back to school after having been home for so long, and anxiety around getting back to crazy schedules, you know, with just full workloads and extracurricular activities in school and homework and happy hours, golf outings with clients, just all of that stuff that came to a screeching halt, that it almost really just felt like, no, we're just all thrown right back into it. Just get right back into it. And that's when the leadership level, we started talking about that more. You know, how do we continue to support our employees, knowing that they're voicing that it's hard to get back to just real life again after we had a pretty long pause. So the openness has probably been the biggest game changer, just in terms of talking about things that maybe before you didn't openly just talk about, things like depression, anxiety, for example.
Yeah, those were personal issues. You might get referred to an EAP, but certainly it wasn't something we were talking about at an all company level or right, at a leadership level in the right past. You know, it makes me think, you know, as I reflect and I've had my own experience through the pandemic and after it that I talk about, but even since then, in this school year in particular, we've talked, you know, I've talked to a lot of other parents about the health challenges of this year because of everybody masking for so long, the rates of flu, of RSV, of the different, right, of COVID, of all the different illnesses that go around were through the roof. I mean, they were higher than they've almost ever been. And so if you had kids, you had kids kind of constantly sick, that you're managing and trying to, you know, get to work and take care of sick kids and all of those challenges that lead to the conversation, I think, about how do you manage being back in the office? How do you manage? Because it's not the same world that it was anymore. You can't really put everything back the way that it was before. So how do you move forward when, in particular, in your industry, you know, you have to have people in the office, in the banks, for people that are coming in to meet with them. And so how do you navigate kind of all of those different workplace practices, you know, remote, in office, being, you know, flexible? What does that look like for a company like yours that is trying to do the right thing and take care of people? How do you go about looking at those practices, and what have you done?
Right. So we really, through those conversations and being very open and, you know, everybody kind of coming to the table and saying, all right, we have to be much more open-minded now, you know, kind of twofold. You have retention issues if you don't. We're in a tight labor market. And so those are huge concerns. And then going back to that mental health piece, you know, how do we truly show our employees that we genuinely care about their well-being? Because guess what? Through the pandemic, we still did well as a company. You know, everybody still put their you know, best foot forward and high work ethic, and nothing major happened or fell through the cracks. So how do we show our people that we truly care, and we can't thank them enough for getting through this, you know, crazy time? And so the conversations then just started around, you know, the hybrid, you know, schedules and what that would look like, and teams that notoriously, you know, were known to be in office only. Is there a way to give them more flexibility? I think in banking, just in general, or financial services, you know, if you were what's known as just a relationship manager. So for us, whether that's your a financial advisor or whether that's your commercial lender or banker, you know, you always had a lot more freedom. And part of that's because you're with clients all the time, whether you're at their, you know, offices, or maybe you are at a golf outing together, you know, whatever that might be, or lunch. But the rest of the company, the support staff and employees didn't have that same level of flexibility. So it was just taking that step back to talk about what are ways we can leverage technology, what are ways we could, you know, restructure teams to make sure that we could give employees what they're asking for. So there were several teams that really were more what's known as like back office operations, so not regularly client facing. So I think you've seen a lot of banks kind of take that approach of giving more hybrid or even full remote type of work options to those people, which again, in the banking sector was not the case. You know, pre-COVID, everybody worked in the office. And a lot of times people even think about banking, you know, just historically was not the most flexible. I mean, even dress code, you know, women always, you know, had to wear suits and you had to wear stockings, and, you know, it was just, it's a very old school practices, mm-hmm. very much so in financial services. So I think what we see now, having even different dress codes, having remote and hybrid schedules and things, when you talk to employees or when I even recruit for our open positions and people coming from maybe other banks or financial systems, they talk about, gosh, the greatest thing that happened because of COVID was a level of flexibility that none of us really had before. A big game changer was having our customer service representatives, or our much like tellers in a bank, but ours operate a bit differently. that was definitely one of those positions where, you know, you had to be in the bank and you are customer facing. That's what you do all day. But we move them to a hybrid rotation and allow for them to have some time working from home. And, you know, they deal a lot with calls and things that they don't need to be just, you know, face to face with that client. But on the back end, they're dealing with a lot so that the people in the office can deal with more of that face to face interaction. So not only has it helped with a little bit of their process and way of doing things and maybe better handling the emails and phone calls versus face-to-face, but also gave them flexibility that they never thought they would have in that type of position, which has been really important for us in just retention of that position.
Yeah. I was going to ask like what that did, you know, I think one being, and I think you mentioned that you had to actually staff up those positions in order to accomplish that you because you had to have certain level of coverage in the bank for safety reasons when people come in to meet with the tellers there. So for those customer service folks, that was, you know, and for your model that required an investment. And so what have you seen in terms of the benefit of that investment? Are you seeing, you know, the retention? Are you seeing other maybe benefits from making that decision?
Yes. So far, retention is high. The ability to recruit for that position has been better. It's been a little easier being able to say that we have a hybrid offering for that position, especially if it's somebody that's coming from maybe a community bank that currently does not allow for that type of flexibility. And then, I think just the workload itself has changed. You know, having the ability to be at home at times and really focus on that call, stepping clients through a problem and helping them through it, and not, quite honestly, in some cases being distracted, because if you're in the lobby and you're that first line of defense, you also have Amazon and UPS drop-offs and mail and just all kinds of people entering the bank at all times. So giving people that opportunity to just focus in on helping the client and allowing them to not be as stressed, I guess, really in that role, and having that, you know, time to just really think through things versus, again, trying to manage 20 things at once.
Often we have a tendency to staff right at capacity, especially for given the financial fluctuations and the challenges and uncertainty in different times. And so we staff right at capacity, which doesn't leave much room when you inevitably have some sort of turnover as well, right? So then you've got challenges being able to fill the gaps when you do experience turnover, as well as the added stress for those individuals who now have to pick up the workload in the absence of the additional support. And then even when you bring on a new resource, you're looking at a runway before you can really have them up to speed, where they're really able to carry that load in a way that reduces the load of the people around them. And I almost wonder if we tend to forget about that when we make those decisions and about the load that we're going to expect, you know, the team members to carry when the inevitable happens, because there's always turnover. It's almost impossible to have zero turnover. So when that happens, you're not prepared for it. I imagine this model kind of has you be more prepared for it.
It does. I mean, yes, to your point, Jessica, you're always going to have a certain level of turnover. And then as you grow, which we certainly have, it's even more likely, where turnover usually increases especially when you're increasing, you know, your staff size. So it really has. I mean, not that you want to lose anybody, but if that comes and somebody does get a better opportunity and you want that for them, being staffed more appropriately, it helps the team not be so stressed when that time comes. And so that's definitely another benefit of just, yeah, staffing up, and especially certain teams like that one, for example, where, you know, again, you have a little bit more than just even your normal day-to-day, just based on who and what comes into your lobby that day. It was important to focus on that team specifically. And like you mentioned, that was one of the essential teams that was here all through COVID too.
You talked about having to work with your leaders or your managers and coming from that traditional financial banking industry. And I love your example of having to wear stockings and suits. And I mean, it paints a picture of that traditional type of working environment. And how, you know, I'd love for you to tell us a little more about how you have worked with your managers or leaders to work them through, you know, through being open-minded to these other ways of working, through transitioning them, or maybe you're still in the midst of some of those challenges. You know, you see a lot of organizations really struggling with this, some mandating back into the office even after they had said that they wouldn't. Everybody's kind of all over the place, and there hasn't been enough time to really have good long-term research data to tell us what the effects of the different choices will be, which makes it hard, I think, to convince leaders or managers of particular approaches, because there isn't necessarily great data to help support it. So you are kind of guessing a little bit. How have you navigated that? What are you doing with your leaders and your managers?
Right. You know, at first it really was just talking to leadership and saying, can we just talk to our employees, just have conversations with them, have conversations with their managers, have conversations with their teams, their direct reports, and just start asking, what do people want? And even more so, the importance of having the conversation and not just even sending out a survey, but truly focusing on having those conversations to say, be able to say, hey, I care about you. I know this transition is hard. Let's talk through, what do you need? What do you want? And it was interesting because luckily we have a really great culture, and people genuinely missed one another. There's a lot of friendships. We have people that, you know, not only have they worked together here at Parkside for years, but at other banks, you know, they work together. So we have some people that have worked, you know, 25 and 30 years together.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a long time.
It is a long time. So, you know, we have people that they know, you know, spouses and kids, and they've seen them grow up and all of these things, and which is really awesome because it does truly bond people and help create a super strong, you know, friendship and workplace. So through those conversations, you know, we had a lot of people saying, hey, I really want to come in. Like I want to get out of my house, or, you know, my animals are driving me nuts. Please let me back in. but it was truly more like I miss feeling connected, and I want to come back in. And then the but came, and the but was, but I want flexibility. Like, I really want to come back in, I miss it, but I want to still have a certain level of flexibility. So what would that look like? So then it really just became conversations with managers, honestly giving, and to your point, we're still going through this. Conversations have not stopped. And it's still talking and meeting with managers saying, you know, what's working, what's not working. If you did move to a hybrid schedule, what's working, what's not working? If you didn't move to a hybrid schedule, do we need to consider that? You know, and that's still a conversation because we still have been hiring. And for certain teams that did not end up going hybrid, primarily because the manager and the team members all decided, no, we just want to be in full time. We like it. We like the flexibility that if we need a day to work from home, that you'll give that to us and we don't have to, you know, worry about that. But we didn't want to be on a true, like, certain number of days in, certain number of days out. They just wanted flexibility. So we have some of those teams, but as they continue to staff up, if the candidates are coming from another bank that they were on a hybrid schedule, then we're kind of back to this whole conversation again, because then it is much more these other candidates saying, no, I've been working now hybrid for 3 years. I don't really want to come in full time. So then we're back to the, what do we do? You know, do we want to change this? Do we allow for, let's say it's a small team of four, you know, is it okay if one person has a hybrid schedule and the others, if they want to be in, just allow them to continue to stay in? How does that, does it mess with the process? Does it mess with the team? So yes, it's still very much a topic of conversation.
Yeah. And I almost wonder if it will ever stop being that kind of topic of conversation because of the changing circumstance and needs. And it almost points to, I think, the uniqueness that we tend to forget about when it comes to each person, in that we are all very unique in our circumstances, where we are in life, our situations. And so that creates, you know, totally different set of needs and requirements. And so I think it might be just as important to be getting clear so people know which positions they're like willing to even be considered for and not. I've certainly heard from a lot of you know, HR leaders and professionals that, you know, they've lost candidates, you know, they've had candidates in the pipeline. And when they finally got to, you know, can I work remote? You know, it's almost like you want that to be a qualifying question so that you don't, both parties don't waste time if it's not an option or if it's a non-starter, so that they know what to expect. They know whether they're going to, you know, whether that's an option or not an option to meet those needs or to fit those needs. And then if you're going to create that level of customization long-term, every time you bring someone in, how are you navigating that? One of the things I think that becomes really critical in the space of all of the talk of in or out of the workplace and everything is the how you manage performance, is how do you manage to get the results, to get things accomplished, to keep productivity, and not just like productivity in terms of, you know, how many widgets in an hour, or how many, you know, processed orders or whatever the metric is, but productivity in terms of, you know, effective performance results, like actually creating the results you want as a company. How are you approaching that? How do you accomplish that? And how important do you think that is?
Good question. You know, I think we're definitely still figuring it out. Part of that was really working with our managers in terms of, yes, we are putting way more onus on them to manage their teams, to let us know if productivity is an issue, you know. And again, like you said, we don't make widgets, so it's easy to not have that as an indicator. But then it became, you know, what is that mechanism? What's that data that we should be looking at that maybe we didn't pay completely great attention to before? So each department really has their own scorecard. It is, you know, here's the five indicators, you know, that we've, you know, identified within our departments that show us that we're strong or if we're, you know, slacking a little bit. So it's again, really on the managers to be tracking that and to make sure that they're having regular conversations with their direct reports. So 2 years ago, we started using EOS, or the Entrepreneurial Operating System, which we talked to a lot of our like fellow banks and even outside financial services industries to say, hey, we're a small but growing organization. We're dealing with, yes, hybrid teams. And then we opened an you know, small office in another city and in state. And we know that we're not being the best communicators. We know we don't have the best tracking in certain areas. You know, what do we do? And it was really through reading and then starting that EOS process, taking some tools. And that's where the scorecard came into play. That's when we started really talking to and training managers to have quarterly conversations, making sure that at least quarterly, but many of them do much, much more touch base with their folks. But having true quarterly conversations, which are almost like little mini annual reviews. How are things going? What are you stuck on? Because we had a lot of new hires, you know, do you feel like your training has been good? You know, have you been trained to feel confident in what you're doing? Is there something you're still not willing to touch because we haven't trained you effectively, appropriately on that? You know, kind of taking that information as well as the departmental scorecards to then try to ascertain, you know, where are areas that we're struggling. And then those areas that we're struggling, does the hybrid scheduling, is that even a piece of the problem or is it not? Is it bigger than that? Certainly we had some issues, you know, staffing up as many other companies did really through COVID. Even training and onboarding new hires virtually was very new for us and being a small company. And so trying to figure out how to do that right, that was a huge hurdle. And we're getting better. We're still not mastered that yet, but much better than we were, you know, just a couple of years ago. Having the same experience of sitting by someone and shadowing them and watching what they do and getting that full up-to-speed training and then moving to, you know, this virtual world and trying to screen share and step through, but doing so in a certain regimented time, you know, that we have set aside for this video versus being able to just walk into someone's office or peek over their computer screen and ask questions. That was, I mean, we're still dealing with that. That's still a difficult. Yeah.
I can see that. I've experienced that myself in that the drive-by or the like, how's it going? Everything okay? Is much less intimidating typically to someone. And so you can kind of get a pulse point on how things are going.
Absolutely.
More easily. And when you reach out virtually, either are there to schedule, you know, to schedule time to do a call or to even just send a message, sometimes that can create like unnecessary anxiety. Why are they checking up on me?
Yes.
Am I doing something wrong? Like, and it creates all this self-doubt. So one of the things I found is that it requires much greater self-awareness and much greater understanding of like human interaction and how to engage in and not misrepresent intent, not, you know, start telling yourself stories in response to a single message and to recognize that it's going to take actually more communication when you're virtual, and whether you use tools for that, however that, you know, whether you're chatting, whether you use project or task management tools, however you do it, it's going to require more active engagement so that you can understand how people are progressing, where they're at, you know, as they're training, as they're learning and all of those things. And so that things don't fall through the cracks, whereas you'd normally be able to just walk by and get a feel for that, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so, yeah, you have some managers that understood that concept, right, and embraced it and even took that look at themselves, right? And then we have some managers that did not, and that was really difficult, and they still struggle with it. There's still comments at times of, I don't know if that person's really working. Well, if I look at my scorecard and I look at the output from what we've determined means that our team is running very well and functioning very well and looking at those metrics and they all are positive. And it data wise, it's seeming to make sense and we're working. There's still that doubt of, but yes, I still don't know if they're truly working.
It's interesting. I think that that doubt actually maybe reveals something for that manager to explore, or all of us in general.
Absolutely.
Because I think that that doubt stems from something, that that if we get to the root of our doubt, either it's our picking up on something that might really be going on. So it's not necessarily ignoring it if there is, because it could be our intuition that something is off. And so tapping into and understanding where that's stemming from, or is it past experience? Is it, what is the root cause of that? Maybe lack of trust. And because then if it's a lack of trust, how do I now intentionally build trust with this person? Right. What do I need from them to dissipate this concern so it doesn't continue to exist, or I don't have to keep asking that question or having those doubts, because those doubts are actually hindering the manager's performance.
Absolutely.
And I think your comment about, you know, some managers still struggling, I would say probably we're all still struggling. And even the greatest managers, like the very best ones, this is really hard, and it's hard for a reason. And that's why we didn't do it for so long, for a reason, which makes a lot of sense. And the fact that we are doing it now doesn't make what we did before better, or what we're doing now worse or better. But it requires us to really adapt to these new skill sets. And that takes time and experience that we don't yet have. And so for managers that are struggling, or anyone, because I still definitely will admit it's a struggle, is it takes time to develop that new neural pathway. It takes time to develop that new muscle. And so you've got to kind of be intentional with that development and with that growth. And when those opportunities come up, like your example of I'm not sure if they're working, or, you know, or any others that come up around it, to use those as learning experiences about yourself, about, you know, how it's working for you, what's working, what's not working. And then to be willing to adapt your style for both yourself and the people that you're managing, because in some cases you may have such high trust that it's a non-issue for a brand new employee, totally different situation. And being really open and transparent about those differences in the beginning when someone's coming in may help prevent conflict, or, you know, how come you don't follow up with this person the way you follow up with me? Well, I've worked with that person for 5 years. I know they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We're not in that situation. And so it means I got to touch base, because I can't walk by. So I got to touch base every day, or at least every couple of days to understand where you're at and how you're progressing. And it's not micromanagement, which is easy to like jump to those types of conclusions, right?
It totally is. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think there's just unique, you know, unique opportunities for growth and for expanded skill sets. And the more we can look at it as that, maybe the easier it is for us as leaders and managers to embrace those learning opportunities and just acknowledge, hey, most of my career wasn't spent doing this, which means as a leader and manager, I got some new skill sets I really got to develop in order to do this well.
Right.
There is one other thing that we talked about, you know, before that I want to spend just a little bit of time on, which is a really unique benefit that you guys offer to your employees that I would argue most workplaces don't offer, your sabbatical benefit. Can you tell us just a little bit about that benefit?
Sure. Yeah, happy to. It's one of the you know, favorite topics when you're trying to recruit somebody and talk about the different types of benefits you offer. So we do have a sabbatical program. So once you have hit your 5-year anniversary, and then every 5 years thereafter, you're eligible for a 1-month sabbatical, or 4 weeks, I should say, sabbatical. And so you still accrue and receive your vacation and sick time during that time. So as a small company, it does mean our managers have to, you know, the employee has to apply and say in enough advance time, I'm planning on going on my sabbatical, you know, this summer, and they turn it in January so that the manager can plan ahead of time. But during that sabbatical, we completely shut off your email. So you can't be on your cell phone checking your emails and responding to clients. We make sure that employees let everybody in their lives and clients know, hey, I'm going to be out on my sabbatical. My work cuts off my access. So you're going to now have this point person to go to for that month that I'm off. And then we provide up to a $5,000 reimbursement for travel or tickets or the things that are associated with that sabbatical. We really encourage employees and their families and or friends to travel and do something fun and completely just kind of shut off work. So the only caveat to getting that reimbursement is you have to send an all employee email that has a video or PowerPoint presentation or slideshow, picture show that highlights what you did on your sabbatical. So yes, a very, very fun and unique benefit. And I think it does a couple different things. You know, it provides a level of empathy for one another because inevitably when you're out, somebody from your team is stepping up in your place, right? And they may be taking on a task that they don't normally do, but now they're kind of forced to, and it makes them understand what your daily life is like that maybe they didn't understand or, you know, appreciate before. And then nobody really complains because they want their time and they know that their time is coming at some point too. So it's very unique in that way.
I just love it. I love it for so many reasons, but I love the idea that there's something to work towards. I imagine it impacts, you know, people sticking around until they get to that point from a retention standpoint. Is that true?
Right. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I've seen that now. Just this year, we had a woman that she had been talking about retirement, but she was like 2 years away from her second sabbatical. And she was like, I want to continue to stay and I love what I do. And I really want that second sabbatical. And so she did and then fully retired after that time and getting that second opportunity.
And I can imagine that people come back feeling kind of really rejuvenated, right? Like oftentimes I've been on 1 2-week vacation years ago and it sometimes it takes the whole first week to just relax, to just like, you know, separate from the regular world. And so you're really not getting that same level of rejuvenation when you're on those shorter, you know, types of trips or those shorter periods of time off. And so, you know, so how has that helped with, you know, longer term retention or even performance? How, when people come back from that, do they come back feeling more energized and, you know, good about their jobs and, you know, and maybe has that impacted stress and burnout levels?
Right. Yes. Yes, I think it has. It's helped in all those areas. Certainly with retention, we do have a pretty high retention rate. And we actually as a company are just going to be turning 15 years old. And we have like 15 people that are going to be on their third sabbatical because they were here kind of from the get-go.
And
start this place. So it's really cool. Just anecdotally, when people come back, they talk about like, man, it was awesome. I've never experienced that before, you know, to have that many consecutive days in a row. And now, you know, too, and I'm certainly guilty of this. It's so hard to unplug. Like you may be on vacation, but you may be like, I'm just gonna check my work email just real quick, make sure everything's okay. So to have that access just completely turned off where you can't, it's funny. I talk to employees and they're like freak out anxiety prior to sabbatical, like, but what if somebody really needs me? You know, what if, and I don't even have the access and nobody can, you know, message me or call me. And it's just that reassuring, like, we'll figure it out. You know, somebody will figure it out. It'll be okay. And if it's really, really something stuck, that 4 weeks is going to go by and you'll be able to help tackle that later. But I think about that for my own self. And the anxiety that comes from like that compulsivity of checking yes. your work email. It's anxiety provoking, but to completely unplug, to just spend the time with friends and family and be more mindful, right? In the moment, mindful, no other distraction, no other worry except for what you're doing in that moment. You truly do come back with a just different perspective. And so, yes, I think very much it helps to address that burnout stress factor.
I'm pretty sure that my next step is going to be to figure out how I can create a 1 month sabbatical moving forward in my business and in my life. Yep. I'm not sure that I have ever taken more than 2 weeks off. So that the idea of taking a whole month off just, you know, really rings true in terms of the benefits and the value of that. And I just love that as a unique benefit, and both to the employee and to the organization in the value that it brings to on both sides of that equation. So Meredith, I want to thank you. This has been a great, conversation. Yeah, you've shared with us so many great insights about your organization and the challenges and how you've been responding to those. Any final thoughts that you want to share with our audience or listeners? Any words of wisdom you want to share as we wrap up this episode?
I feel like my biggest thing in that, I'm talking to, I had a couple conversations today with some employees, is just having true empathy for one another and care for one another, and how important that is in our world today. Just not forgetting that, and just how do we be kind to one another. So I feel like if there's anything that I will continue to push my own self to do and talk to the employees here to do is just that, being kind to one another, think about being in someone else's shoes, and always how can you extend a hand and be helpful.
Yeah, certainly the greater empathy, compassion we can have for one another, the better we will be able to show up for each other in the world. And it has huge implications for our society, but also our performance and the results that we can accomplish in the workplace. And so, I love that as a final insight and a final suggestion. I think it's always appropriate to have more of that emotional intelligence, more of that empathy and understanding, for one another. So, well, thank you so much, Meredith. We were so glad you could join us, and great discussion. Thank you to our listeners for taking the time to listen. And as always, just remember to just always keep evolving, growing, and working on yourself.